All right, everyone, it's Thursday. This is the morning briefing from the Celtic Way. You know all that by now. My name's Hamish. You probably know that as well. You also know that Ryan's on. You probably deduced that Tony's not with us. He doesn't often do Thursdays, does he, Ryan? But he comes back for the big show on the Friday.
That's it, absolutely. I think Thursday is doggy daycare. I don't think he'll mind me saying that. He looks after his... I think he's got four or five dogs at his possession currently, so that's his... As he specified, Dave, the dogs. You can probably hear them on the morning briefing from time to time. But, yeah, that's the day that he picks as his day off to spend with them. But, yeah, just the two of us, but still plenty to talk about. Getting closer and closer to the next game, which is absolutely brilliant. Feels like it's been a really, really long season, but we're really getting into the juicy bit of it now. I'm looking forward to getting to Saturday.
Very much so. Right, first of all, we're thrilled to have Weissmann, who are a global leader in the boiler industry, sponsor our podcast. They've teamed up with MPH Boilers, which makes this a match made in heaven. Weissmann's boilers are engineered to deliver not just warmth, but unparalleled efficiency and reliability. Cutting-edge technology is what we're talking. It saves you money on energy bills and also reduces emissions. And with MPH Boilers, you know you're getting service from the best in the business. They're a local team. When you choose a Weissmann boiler that's installed by MPH, you'll also get a free internet controller, and they're offering the first year service free. So check out the people at the top of the screen and take your first step towards a warmer, more efficient home. You know the script by now, everyone.
Yep, absolutely. 6 months of access for £1. I'd like to thank everybody that's joined us so far on this. We actually hit our first target yesterday. Not gonna name the number that we hit yesterday, but we've hit one of our main targets, which is absolutely tremendous. A million. I wish that that'd be absolutely tremendous, but
I'd be off on a beach somewhere.
So would I. I'd be probably with you. 6 months of access for £1, plus a free Kyogo Furuhashi print from renowned football artist made by Frankie, www.celticway.co.uk/subscribe. On there this morning, there is a scouting piece on the Trabzonspor goalkeeper, Kakia, that's been linked with the club in recent days. Not going to give any spoilers away about that, but if Celtic are looking for a goalkeeper, maybe they should look at him because his stats look absolutely tremendous.
Turkish number one as well.
He's a wee bit digging
into him. A few weeks ago, he's been at them pretty much his whole career. What's the latest chat there? I've missed that completely.
There was a recent report that came out that said that Trabzonspor were looking for somewhere in the region of £12 million. Now, I don't think Celtic will be spending £12 million on a goalkeeper. I don't think they'll be spending £12 million on a player. Never mind the goalkeeper, but. You know, there was that link last week that Michael Nicholson had got in contact with the higher ups at Trabzonspor about this player. So you're hoping that there is some sort of truth in that. It is a position that Celtic need to fill. They also need to fill other areas on the pitch and off the pitch, such as the head of recruitment, which does concern me just ever so slightly. Why are Celtic going for players when they don't have a head of recruitment? I think it should be the other way about. They should have the head of the recruitment before signing players. But this guy looks to be the business. There was Chelsea, Arsenal, etc. were all linked with him a couple of years ago, but he seems to have stayed put. And he looks a pretty good goalkeeper, really good in 1v1 situations. I think that's the one thing that really stands out. Good at going off his line, kind of like Arthur Boric was with the sort of starfish when he comes out and runs and gets those saves. So he's really good in those positions, good at passing with the ball at his feet. Just looks like a good modern-day goalkeeper and in the prime of his career at 28, so... That'd be a good signing if it was to go ahead, but I think there's a bit of a wiggle room to be negotiated between the two sides, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think there was a mention of Southampton as well. I know that's not quite at the Liverpool and Chelsea level, but it seemed like that was very close. He was very close to signing for Southampton maybe last summer or the year before. Not sure if they were in the Premier League at that stage, but he's clearly someone decent. What are your overall thoughts on the goalkeeper stuff at the moment? Like, what kind of road do you think will go down?
I've got to say, I do like the profile of player that have been linked with the club in recent days. You know, 27, 28-year-old. I think the Werder Bremen goalkeeper was linked, whose name escapes me. But he's been linked also, the Dutch goalkeeper. Was it... I can't remember his name as well. It's been that there's been three goalkeepers that have been linked to the club. They've all been the same age, round about the same profile, good with the ball at their feet. So it seems as if they're doing their identification correctly. 28 for a goalkeeper is still young. It's a completely different position to the rest of the park.
Yeah.
I'd rather somebody was that than maybe 24, 25, because they've got their footing in the game. They've played a lot of games. You know, 28, you can still play for another 15 years if you're a goalkeeper at the age of 28, sometimes 15, 20 years. It's incredible, especially nowadays with how well goalkeepers take care of themselves. So for Celtic, I think this is a position that they're going to need to look at for the next 3 to 4 years rather than 1 to 2. I want a goalkeeper to come in and instantly command that. You know, Joe Hart's been a great servant for the club, but it's all about taking that next step. You're hoping that Celtic can improve upon Joe Hart, maybe somebody that's better with the ball at their feet. That being said, I think Joe Hart's arguably had one of his best seasons at Celtic. He's had a good innings at Celtic, but this season, especially the second half of it, I think he's been one of Celtic's best players. I think he's making a push to being one of the players of the year at the moment. So I've been quite happy with what he's doing. I think he's really riding off into the sunset, and hopefully he'll have the trophies to show for it at the end of the season. But yeah, what a servant to the club. Three brilliant years he's had.
There's certainly a growing, motion for Joe Hart to be potentially named player of the year. I think, you know, Matt O'Reilly's obviously a contender as well. There might be a few other people in there. Maybe not a great deal considering the season we've had and more so the injuries we've had. I dare say the kind of final matches of the season will have some sort of a play in it, although they announce it a good few weeks before the end of the campaign. But I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Hart ends up getting it, or certainly like the supporters player of the year or something like that. I certainly think he'll get some. By the way, I don't know if you saw this. I saw that Celtic, I got an email about an event with Joe Hart that the club are putting on after the season. It might even be into June, a kind of Q&A they're doing. Did you see that at all?
I didn't see that, but I'm happy that they're extending things with him just ever so slightly. He deserves that. He deserves this send-off, because I think he's had a tremendous career, both domestically and internationally. You know, it's good that one of the elite goalkeepers of the past 10, 15 years, and I would put him up there because he had some tremendous appearances for Man City in the Champions League. There's a game in particular I remember where he went to the Westfalen Stadium, as well as the Barcelona, the Nou Camp, but he kept Man City in the game. I think it was 2012, 2013. That was Jurgen Klopp's Borussia Dortmund that had Götze, that had Royce, Lewandowski. And he single-handedly kept Man City in the game. I think it was a draw, but he was absolutely incredible that night. He's had some of those performances for Celtic too. Yes, he came towards the end of his career. That's probably the reason why he came, because of his wages as well. He would have been asking for too much earlier on in his career. But I think he's been a tremendous servant, and I'm glad that Celtic are giving him the send-off that his career deserves, because he was sort of fading into obscurity. You know, he was third choice at Tottenham at the best of times. He was hardly getting his game at Burnley. You look at his time at Torino as well. Ever since Pep Guardiola sort of bombed him out of that Man City team, his career was on the downward trajectory. So I'm glad that he's had this final sort of a swan song, and he's really taken it with both hands. I'm absolutely delighted for him.
I see what you did there, both hands. We've had three comments in to do with Player of the Year, and two of them are putting Joe Hart forward. Kaiser, Liam Scales. It's a bold shout, Kaiser. It's a bold shout. Someone's calling Kaiser out as well, but, you know, Scales certainly has had a good season, I would say. I don't want to spend the whole video talking about Joe Hart, but I was just thinking there. I mean, I think as the general consensus seems to be that we'd want a younger goalkeeper in.
Yeah.
If there was, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but if there was another person, goalkeeper in a similar position to where Joe Hart was a few years ago, like a fallen giant, if you will, or a fallen great, if you want to call him that, would you go for that again? I mean, why is it we want a younger keeper?
I think it's just modern football, isn't it? It's one of those things you want to have pacey defenders.
Do we want one of those that can play out with their feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they add something to the team. I think, but they're not exclusive. The fact, if you're better with your feet, Well, obviously you want to be better with your hands and your feet, but you can be good at both. You know, there's players in the past that have shown that. You know, look at modern football nowadays. I know they go for top dollar, but I think Celtic have got to find them. If they're looking for that sort of player, then they've got to scout them before the big mega scouts of Benfica, Porto, etc. find them in South America. That's where Celtic should be stationed if they're looking for the next best thing.
Is it too much of a risk, though? You look at, I know it's a different position, but you look at how Bernabe worked out. Imagine Bernabe being a goalkeeper. Awful thought, but imagine he had been. That would have been a complete disaster. Your goalkeeper has to be good, otherwise you're not going to do anything.
Yeah, I think the thing with teams like Benfica and Porto, they usually have a goalkeeper coming through, but they'll have a more experienced goalkeeper as well. They'll go with two. Some of them maybe even play the Champions League games and the domestic cup games, and then one of them plays the league or whatever way it is, but they always have someone in the background that can come through. Jan Oblak wasn't a starter for Benfica until his like second last season or last season. He actually went out on loan a couple of times, came back, was that good. They had only a season at Benfica, and then Atletico Madrid came calling. Now he's one of the best goalkeepers in the world and has been for the past 6, 7, 8 years. So it's a risk, you know, it is a risky position. Maybe it's a position that Celtic cannot afford to have risky players in. I'm trying to think of a fallen giant that's came across hard times that isn't Fraser Foster, to be honest.
Yeah, someone, was it Joe, I think, was mentioning Fraser Foster a minute ago. I actually wouldn't be surprised if the club looked at Foster, because we seem pretty obsessed by Foster. Probably a little bit past it, dare I say now, although what a goalkeeper that, you know, is prime. And even a couple of years ago when we had him for that season, he was possibly even better than the previous
thing. I think he was. Yeah, look at the game against Lazio, look at the game against Rangers.
Yeah, I know he's a bit younger, but they've had success over the road with Jack Butland. I know he's not had the career that Joe Hart has had generally, but I was putting it out there. I do think Celtic will go younger. Anyway, let's say we've spent over 10 minutes talking about goalkeepers. What do you want to talk about today? Because there are a few things happening, a bit of controversy. Dundee Rangers didn't happen last night. It's probably not one for us to really talk about too much. Do you, as a Celtic fan, do you have any thoughts on this?
I'd much rather have the points on the board than have games in hand. That's one thing I would say. Puts more pressure on on Rangers on Sunday, I would say, especially if Celtic win against St Mirren.
4 points clear.
4 points clear, you put that pressure directly on, then Rangers have two games in which to make that back and then go top of the league. Yes, it's against favourable opposition, you would say, in Dundee and Ross County respectively, but they're away from home. As far as we know, with the Dens Park, they'll be away from home and they've not moved it to a different location. That's just a nightmare scenario. I was watching the pitch inspection live on Sky Sports. You knew 10 minutes before it was announced that it was going to be called off, because whenever Don Robertson was chucking the ball wasn't moving. It was just sticking to the ground. It's as if there was blue tack on the pitch, and it was not an ideal situation. And I do agree with some of the commentators saying it's a bit embarrassing for the league that, you know, after a great Glasgow derby, the 3-3, the next game to be shown on the TV or not shown on the TV is a game that's been cancelled twice due to a waterlogged pitch in April. I get climate change and all of that, but it isn't the greatest look for the league. You know, the climate change argument was one of the arguments made by one of the Dundee directors, but it's just not a great look. But as I said, I'd much rather have the points on the board than playing catch-up, especially when the small matter of the split is coming up. There's a lot of pressure that needs to be finished before that game needs to be finalised, before the split fixtures are announced, just due to the way Dundee and Hibs are currently in the league. It's a nightmare scenario, but I'd much rather have the points in the pitch is what I'm trying to say, long story short.
Am I wrong for just wanting anarchy with this situation? I want a horrendous situation for Rangers where they have to play like 24 hours after another match or something mad like this. I just kind of want it to go on and on and see what happens.
A title race for you.
We've banked our points for that match day a few weeks ago. I think it was the St Johnstone game, wasn't it? I mean, we're kind of we've got the points in the bank is basically what I'm trying to say, and I just want it just to be as difficult for them. They'll probably still win. I mean, Motherwell beat Dundee away from home on that pitch. So it can't be that much of an advantage for the home team, but I'm happy for it to go on for a bit longer and for us just to keep winning. I think that's also why it's important from the weekend. Like, we're not really looking at, well, we're looking at Rangers scores, but we're not really needing anything. We'd take a wee result, it'd be a bonus, but we're just focused on ourselves, and I guarantee that in that dressing room, there's that focus as well. They'll look out, they'll look out for the Rangers scores, of course they will, but I think they're just, you know, they've got that laser focus at the moment. So yeah, give us 10 more postponements and Rangers having to squeeze it in, preferably a day before they come to Celtic Park. VAR stuff, did you see Aberdeen's statement yesterday? The stuff from the weekend.
I've got to say, it got lost in all of the hullabaloo of the Dens Park. It was probably a smart time to put this statement out because it would have been front and centre if it wasn't. Really, really strongly worded. They really did not hold a lot back in that statement whatsoever. I've watched that goal a couple of times since, and if you're guessing about that, then you've got to give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker in that situation. Surely it is so close.
Did you see the still that the SFA put out in their statement and the line they've used to say that it's was offside on Angus McDonald at the kind of back post? Like, it doesn't look like it's in line with the penalty box, you know, the 18-yard line.
Not the first time that we've heard this. I remember the infamous Jota goal that wasn't, yeah, that would have been goal of the season, similar. Probably.
Technical errors.
I think that would have been, I think we were robbed of potentially goal of the season from Jota. It was an absolutely incredible finish. Sometimes I like to think that goal counted just because it was that good. Thankfully, Celtic got the job done in that game. But, VAR, I've got to be honest, and this is an unpopular opinion, I am a fan of VAR, but I'm not a fan of the way it's getting implemented. You only need to look at the way that VAR was implemented last night in the Champions League. The clue is in the name, assisting the referees. It's an assistant referee. It's not re-refereeing the game. It's not VRR, it's VAR. And it very much gets used like that in the Champions League. It takes a sort of back seat, allows the referee on the pitch to sort of get the final, to get the overarching view on the game, and it's used to assist the referee when it's needed. And every decision takes about at most 10-20 seconds to resolve, unless it is a changing, and in which case it's quicker anyway. I just like the model that they've got in the Champions League, and you're getting better games in the Champions League because of it. There's no surprise that the games in the Champions League have been so good because of two things. One, they've got rid of away goals, and two, the VAR's less all-encompassing than before. So I don't understand why it's not the same VAR. If there's one VAR, if there's VAR, then it should be the same for every single league. It should be unified. I don't understand that. It's such an important thing, and there's so many different things to different ways of implementing it. It should be the one unified stance, and everybody should just adhere to it.
We don't have the VAR that UEFA does. We have VAR Lite, I think they called it when it first came in. You don't hear that term used anymore, which I think is interesting in itself. But for the vast, vast majority of games in the Premiership, the ones that aren't televised live by Sky Sports, they only have 6 cameras in use. And I think that's a major issue. It was a major issue for the Jota thing, because if that game had been live on TV, remember that night it wasn't, it was a pay-per-view match. That Jota night, if that had been live on TV, you would have had another camera you could have looked at. Same with the Aberdeen thing against Livingston. I can't remember an instance of this happening down south. Maybe there has been. They've had VAR for much longer, and they play far more matches every single weekend in their Premier League. But it just seems like we've had far more of these kind of technical errors, and it just because it's been done in the cheap. And that was the crux of Aberdeen's statement yesterday. And for me, yeah, we're reaching a point where, clubs have to, stand up and decide what they're doing, and they probably need to consult with supporters about that. I'm just reading an article here about, the Swedish Football Association, who earlier last year admitted that VAR needs, they need to take a look at VAR, it needs greater scrutiny, and they've decided not to discuss its adoption into Swedish football until at least the autumn of 2024. So it's slightly different to us, but they're, I think, the only country among Europe's top 30 leagues that doesn't have VAR. So we wouldn't even be the only ones. I don't think it's going to be scrapped because, you know, I think there's loads of things like our referees can't referee big European games and use VAR for that if they're not using it domestically. But that's not really my issue right now. My issue is that the VAR is just, for me, is a nightmare in Scottish football. And I'd love for, you know, Aberdeen are clearly not happy. They've reached a point where they think action needs to be taken. It either needs to be improved or we need to look at other options. Celtic have called it out in the past. Other clubs have as well. Yeah, decisions are one thing, and there's been so many bad decisions made, human error, but the technology not working for me is pretty unforgivable, and that's happened at least twice now. Scott asking, does anyone know how much clubs pay for VAR? I'm not sure. I'd need to look into that.
I know Celtic and Rangers pay the most for it. They took a bigger hit in order for VAR to come in. I know there was smaller sort of... what would you call that? Smaller fees paid by some of the teams that maybe couldn't afford as much, but I know Celtic and Rangers took a hit. It's not going anywhere. This is the thing. VAR is not going to go anywhere if it's in, if it's been implemented.
From fans and Aberdeen are clearly questioning things.
I think it becomes a sideshow, even if it does get taken away, because then they're one of the leagues in Europe that don't have it. I know the Championship don't have it, but once it's, there's got to be an alternative. They've got to find a way in which that it doesn't become this sideshow all the time. Now, I think it always will be in that regard, because that's the nature of Scottish football up here. It's the nature of referees up here. The referees almost become a sideshow in itself, maybe due to the reputation that some have, or the way that people look at referees historically. But it's not going to go anywhere. I think it can be a good thing, and I was calling for it to come in before it came through. It's just, I think it's, the refereeing standard in Scotland isn't good enough. I think we've all known that for ages, for years on and years, but this has managed to show it in an even worse light. It's managed to highlight how poor the refereeing can be sometimes in the league. So I guess that's one positive that's done. But you see, when it's at the benefit, when it's against your club, at the detriment of your club, then it's really not great. I mean, you only have to look at the first game that was introduced in, an absolute sideshow against Hearts at Tynecastle. Always seems to be Hearts at Tynecastle, the VAR mad games, but that first one was an absolute crazy game, and not in a good way. Felt like guinea pigs almost, Celtic, when they were playing in that game. But it's something that needs to be, it needs to be improved upon, but I don't think it's going to be going anywhere, unfortunately. If you like it or not, I don't think it's going to be going anywhere.
What a selling point it would be for Scottish football to not have VAR. The biggest league in Europe not using VAR. Proper football. There's your tagline right there for Scottish football. Honestly, I don't see it coming, though, if I'm honest. In answer to the question a minute ago, just looked it up there. VAR is expected to cost around £1.2 million per season. So that's total cost. Premiership winners will pay approximately £195,000 per season, so that's what Celtic are paying roughly. Sliding scale down the league, bottom club in the Premiership pay around £67,000. So that's how much it's costing Celtic. £200,000 a year, value for money. I'll let you make your own mind up on that. Referees have been announced for the weekend. Ryan, we've got Stephen McLean as the ref, Callum Spence and John McCrossan on the as linesman. Fourth official Peter Stewart, VAR's David Dickinson, and assistant VAR is Gary Hilland. Brendan Rodgers did an interview yesterday. Did you catch that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually trying to think back to it now. It was only like a slight version.
Describing Dyson Mide as the king of the lost cause. Loved that.
I like that, and I do agree with that statement as well, because he did chase a lost cause, albeit early on, so he had all the stamina to do so. But he does chase lost causes, and he got his rewards on Sunday with a great, I don't want to call it a deflection. Is it a deflection into the goal? Or he sticks a leg out and it manages to hit off him and go in.
Great finish for me.
Yeah, it was a very low I'm going to bring the XG into it as well, but it was a really low XG chance as well. I think it was 0.02 that rose to 0.04. So I think it shows you just how unlikely it was to hit the back of the net. A lot of people have been calling out sort of Jack Butland for his performance, especially for that goal and the third goal, but I don't think there's much that he can do about either, to be honest with you. Had a couple of really good saves in the game as well, especially from Matt O'Reilly, that header. A phenomenal save from him, from a really good goalkeeper, I must say. But yeah, I don't think he could have done much with those two, especially the third goal as well. But yeah, it feels like it's been longer than the 3-4 days since that game. It feels like forever since Celtic's played. I don't know about you, just due to all the fallout that's happened after it. But I'm looking forward to getting back to Celtic Park at the weekend, you know, hopefully get back to winning ways at home in the Scottish Premiership and see players get returned to even fuller fitness for this title running. That tunnel vision's got to be there. If they win all their games from now until the end of the season, they've got a double in the trophy cabinet, so that's got to be their aim.
Yeah, you excited for the weekend, as we've said, you know, a number of times this week. I think we're going to get a big crowd. I've spoken to a fair few fans, you know, pals and stuff this weekend. Everyone seems buzzing. We're counting down the days for it. Saturday 3 p.m. We've not played at home probably in around a month. I think St Johnson was the last game. So I think it's going to be good. And just hopefully the team are just ready, because it's a chance to go 4 points clear. And I know that they'll have games in hand, but just bank the points right now, Celtic. Keep winning and you know, turn the pressure, or keep the pressure up on them.
Yep, absolutely. As we said at the start of this podcast, it's always better to have the points on the board than have games in hand, because those games in hand, you can still drop points in them. They're still to happen. And at least when you've won the games, you've got the concrete points in the bag. I'm always looking forward to going back to Celtic Park. You know, you never ever take it for granted at all. I always remember the time that we were without it for about a year and a half, which was an absolutely hellish time without going to the football. So I never ever take it for granted. Every time you go there, you always look forward to it, regardless of how the team's playing, because it's an opportunity to see your team in person. Always look forward to covering it for the Celtic Way as well, doing the podcast pre and post match. But yeah, regardless of who it's against, I think St Mirren, they've not been on the greatest of form recently, but they look as if they'll be in the, or they will be in the top six, so they've had a good season. So yeah, always a difficult challenge against the Stephen Robinson side. We'll probably play them after the split as well, probably away from home. I'd guess that'd be one of their away from home games, but yeah, they won't have Kwon. I'm looking forward to the game at the weekend, is what I'm trying to say. Man, I'm terrible with words today, but I'm buzzing for the game. You know, it's been a month since Celtic have been at Celtic Park, so yeah, good to get back and hopefully get the 3 points to go along with it.
We've been all right against St Mirren this season. There was that kind of nervy 2-1 game when O scored really late on, but the two games recently in Paisley were both pretty straightforward victories, and they kind of both arrived at kind of times when maybe there were questions about the team. So, no, I'm feeling good. I'm just excited to see the team. I mean, how good would we all feel if they put a bit of a statement? Winning's the main thing, and, you know, obviously sign me up for 6-1-0 wins. Bite your hand off. It'd be pretty nervy, but I'd bite your hand off for that. But I think it would be really good if the team, just right from the start, were at it, like we have been quite a lot in the home games, like the Dundee game recently, that kind of performance. I just thought the Livingston game was forgotten about quite quickly because we went into the derby, but I thought that was a real telltale sign of this Celtic team being focused. Like, Livy's a tough place to go. I know they're having a poor season, but we were really business-like that day, and even at 0-0 at half-time, there was no nerves in the performance, and that almost more than Ibrox on Sunday just convinces me that the team is ready just to kind of chalk off the wins one by one. I'm excited to see the game on Saturday, actually. Midnight kick-off here, so I'll be staying up for that, and yeah, Henrik McClarkson saying the crowd will be crucial. I really, not to put pressure on anyone or call anyone out, obviously people have their reasons maybe for not making games, but I hope I don't turn it on and see loads of kind of empty seats like you do from time to time. That there should be no real reason other than, you know, very important things in people's lives for people not to go along on Saturday. It's a huge game. Team need a bit of support now. I think they deserve a bit of support, and I think they'll get that support. And just hope it's a real big crowd. I'm pretty sure it will be, because, you know, people have got the bug at the moment, don't they?
Certainly do, and I think it's because there's been an upturn in performances as well, and it starts with that. Like, even the Livingston game beforehand, even although they conceded two goals in that game, I thought some of the football was quite good that Celtic showed on that afternoon. St Johnstone, then they followed that up. I think it's been ticking along quite nicely since the Dundee game. I know that Celtic lost against Hearts that weekend, but that was a game in itself, and it was mental. And Celtic actually started that game really well. I always mention that, but they did start that game quite well until the red card happened, or that transpired. But I just think there's been an upturn recently in the performances, yeah. And that's down to players returning, Kyogo scoring goals, Ida's scoring goals as well, Hatate's returning to prominence, Carter Vickers giving that stability at the back, even though he conceded three goals at the weekend. I thought he was Celtic's best player. So you get the spine of the team back like that, and you will see an upturn in performances, which is good to see. It's an interesting one to see what they do with Cal McGregor, as we discussed yesterday. It'd be interesting if he starts the game or if he comes off the bench. I think Rodgers' comments tomorrow will be quite interesting in that regard. But they've got options. Bernardo showed that he can come off the bench and do things pretty well. He's probably knocking at the door for a start, considering he got an assist in his last game and a goal the game before. So he's a player that can be relied upon. Could he start against St Mirren? I'm not so sure, because Hatate's in the team, but food for thought for the manager, and there's plenty of options in and around the team, which is absolutely brilliant to see. I'm just wanting players like Kuhn to come back into prominence. He didn't have a great game against Rangers, albeit he got the cross in that Scales attacked that was a touch for Goldson. I want to see more from him.
I thought Kuhn was fine. I wouldn't say it was his best game. I thought he was involved enough in that first half. He kind of caused him a few issues, I would say. I thought he was fine, certainly in comparison to what we saw from Yang in the second half. He offered a lot.
Yeah, Yang was not great in the second half at all. And I hate to single him out, because I've really enjoyed some of his performances recently, but no defensive... There was no defensive education about him whatsoever, or a mentality. He just, that's exactly the word I was looking for. Thank you very much. That other angle of Matondo's goal that Rangers posted, yeah, it really does show Yang for all his poor defending, light and all. The poor defending is just, he just gives up on it almost. He gets turned and there's no second challenge for him whatsoever. He just gets left in the lurch. Great finish from Matondo, but that's where he's got to learn. He's got a lot of talent, a lot of raw talent, but as Alan Morrison said in his piece yesterday, sometimes he resembles a teenager in the way he plays. Sometimes he can be really talented. Yeah. The good and bad points of that, because you can be a talented teenager but still lack the skills to do it on that end of the pitch, and that was the latter on Sunday.
Be interested to see if Rodgers throws him into a big game again this season, or whether he maybe looks at someone like James Forrest going forward. Right, a few comments that I've just seen throughout the stream. Just fire through them before we go. Christopher saying it's easy to say win the remaining games to win the league. Unfortunately, it's never that easy in reality. Gordon, yes, despite late disappointment on Sunday, we seem to have our mojo back with key players returning. I'm very confident we can win our remaining games. Bit of chat about VAR. Andy saying professional officials are needed in Scotland, then they can be judged as they are in other countries. Thomas, if you had to name the best referee in Scotland, who would you pick?
Don't know. I push Nick Walsh. I can't honestly, but I just think in general it's a really poor pool of referees to choose, and that's probably down to the fact that they're not full time as well. If they were full time, then maybe they'd be better, because they were putting more time into it. But I don't want to attack the referees too much. I think that's been done a lot this week, to be honest. But yeah, it wasn't the greatest of performances from John Beaton on Sunday. That's pretty much all I've got to say on the matter. I know some people were saying it was a good performance. Look at the fouls that Celtic were getting given. You look at the foul totals for the two sides. It was quite alarming on one side, to be honest.
Ask us an easier question next time, Thomas, like the meaning of life or something like that. Best referee in Scottish football.
Andrew, people are saying Willie Colm, it probably is.
Andrew, we've been playing well without McGregor. Does McGregor start this weekend? I don't actually know, because I'm not Brendan Rodgers. I'm not sure. What do you think? Do you think he will start? I feel like I'd maybe be 50-50, but, well, maybe 60-40 in favour of him not starting.
If he can play 60 minutes, if that's his sort of time frame, then play him for the 60 minutes and bring him off after that and bring somebody on like Daniel Kelly or Iwata if he's not started the game. Personally, I'd want Iwata to continue to start. I like this run that he's been having in the team in recent weeks. I thought he was quite decent at Ibrox as well. I just think he's a solid option. There's nothing flashy about him, but you know what he does, and he gives you that stability in the middle of the park in that engine room. Celtic, it might be a position that Celtic need to strengthen in. I know they've been kind of looking for that defensive midfielder for years, it seems. You know, they've had Abelgaard, they had Beaton. I know he was in and out of the team.
Abelgaard.
Abelgaard. There was another one as well, and I'm trying to think. James McCarthy could probably put in that. Although Adiguchi was more of a number eight, and he plays as a number eight for Vissel Kobe as well. So he was always too lightweight to be a number six. Although you have had number six in the past. Soro as well. I remember that. We'll always have Leo, in which Evan Turnbull really turned it on for that one game in the season, but. It's definitely a position that Celtic, I think, need to, as well as goalkeeper, I think defensive midfielder, if you can get a player in there that really can make that position his own and sort of force Cal McGregor to go further forward, I think you'll see the difference, especially in Europe. There was always that link with Vinicius Souza. I know he's at Sheffield United. Could that be something that they look at if and when Sheffield United go down? You know, that looks as if they will go down at the end of the season. I think they're one of the certainties actually to go down. So could be somewhere that they look back at, maybe at a cut price deal. But you look at the prices in the championship, you know, he'll go for a pretty penny. Being Brazilian as well, you know, Brazilian defensive midfielder, you know, he's got that about him. You know, you look back to the players that Celtic have been linked with, you know, how much is Douglas Luiz worth now? And he was linked for a loan move to Celtic 10 years ago when he was at Manchester City. So, you know, Celtic are identifying these players. It's just all about getting them at the right time before they become too expensive.
Paying money, actually money to sign them. You know, that's the thing, Celtic. Mario,
is he on loan? 20 says he's on loan from Man City.
All right. What I thought he signed permanently. What do you think will happen if the game next Wednesday for that lot does not go ahead? I think they'll be in a desperate rush to get it on, potentially play it when they normally wouldn't, or I think by then they'll have to come up with some sort of contingency to play it somewhere else, possibly Hampden. I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see. I saw people saying that Tannadice wouldn't be an option because it's not equipped with VAR. You could play it at Tannadice and not use VAR for that match. So it's going to be fun in games. And finally, Pete saying, at this stage of a very close season, you should be sitting in your seat at Parkhead unless it's a matter of life and death. I agree. Or if you can't make the game, make sure you give your ticket to someone else so they can go along and support the team. I want to see a full Celtic Park on Saturday. And you know what, Ryan? I think we will. Right, we're going ahead. Final shout out for this 6 months access for £1 plus a free Kyogo Furuhashi print from renowned football artist made by Frankie. And it looks wonderful. Back tomorrow, Ryan. We'll have Tony with us at that stage as well. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Speak to you then.